Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am your host, Robert. We are done with the summer basketball series. It's time to move on to football, and it is time to talk about football practice. So, my guest today, I have written about practices watched with this guy for, we just figured it out, like 11 years now. We first watched practices together in Rantoul in like 2012. I wrote about it at the time. I've written about you like 10 times, Coach. So this is Coach. You're not going to know his name. It's like Bob Zupke. You know him as Bob Zupke. This is Coach. You're just going to know him as Coach. He and I have stood on the sideline at Rantoul, stood on the sideline in the Florida Avenue athletic fields or whatever they called. We have watched practices together, and this past weekend, he was in the stands with the donors watching the game. I was in the stands with the media watching the practice, I shouldn't say game. And so we have a lot of thoughts. We haven't talked. I just said, hey, let's record it when we talk this time. I should just say it this way. You and I usually do a download like this. We usually, like if we're both at a practice, or if we were both, or if you were at practice at some point in 2016 because you drove over because you're crazy like me, then you would call me on your way back, or I would call you on my way back, and we would just talk, oh, I saw this, and who, you know, it was running with the twos today, and blah, blah, blah. So let's just do that in front of people. But first, I have to say welcome, and you got to get your voice on here. So welcome, Coach, to We Love No Other. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
Let's see. Yeah, it's 11 years. We have texted so many times in the last 11 years. I wrote about, you know, what it was like to just watch a practice with you as a former high school football coach, and you know the things you see. I wrote that article in like 2014 or something. But yes, like it's been great for the last 10-11 years. You know, to get to know the Illinois football junkies in the world, like the real, real crazy junkies, and you're one of them. You know, the fact that you would just get up and just be like, you know what, I'm driving over to Champaign today. I have to see this practice. It's open. I'm going. You know, you're like me that if you weren't meeting me in Rantoul someday, you'd just be there by yourself, sitting there by yourself.
Has been quite a while, and as my buddies tease me about this, hey, you need to get a life. And it's like, you don't understand, this was my life before.
Right.
Scouting Stevenson, Moline, East St. Louis. Now it's Indiana, Purdue. My wife will say, is any way we can make some money off this? It's like, no, you know, grandpa does crossword puzzles and Sudoku, and I'll break down tape in the spring game. It took me weeks, a month, you know, go through each play, every player, just plus or minus, and it's just it's fun. It's just,
okay, I want to dig in on that. So you watch a spring game over and over, and you grade every player every play?
I try to, yeah.
That's and amazing.
It took forever. And of course, you know, it's just, you don't know exactly what their assignments are. It's kind of like the PFF, those scores. They get two or three guys too, but it, you get a good feel for, you know what, he's doing okay, or my mind, you know what, he needs to step up. If you're playing nose guard and that center, that backup center is blocking you, we got a problem. Just little things like that. And then I watch, break down the games from last year, you know, like I've got written down the defensive positions I was a little worried about. Weak corner was one of them. Adams is gone. Taz Nicholson did not have a good year last year playing in games. And so then the spring game, it's like, okay, he does better, then I'll listen to all the coaches, get interviewed, and Coach Henry's like, hey, Taz is making that step up. So that makes me feel better. But, yeah, this is this is not, it would be so different for somebody. And like you wrote the article in reference to the train guy. Mm-hmm. And I just love that. Mm-hmm. And that's just, this is who I am. And people will say, well, you know, what do you do in retirement? And it's just kind of hard to describe. And some people just say, well, I just kind of do the Illinois football thing. And like, well, how? Just, well, I mean, are you on their staff? No, I just do it for fun. And then, so that's where we are.
Yep. I love so much about the, I just love being able to know that when I'm in my home office here, like researching something, like today, I put this recording off. I think I told you 1 o'clock, then I told you 2, then I told you 2:30, then 2:45, mostly because I was researching one thing that will be part of the preview, and I was just going through line by line and this and that, and when I dig in on that, it's 3, 4, 5, 6 hours of, you know, whatever, and I just love knowing that there's others out there doing the same. I love knowing that on some Tuesday morning in May, you were going through the spring game and like, okay, time to watch the left guard for the next 30 plays. Like, I love the fact that that's happening in the world, because there's, you know, there's just a few of us who are obsessed about this in the same way. You know, there's a few of us who understand why I would write 25,000 word previews every year for Illinois football. And it's just our thing, man. That guy's got his trains and we've got Illinois football.
Yeah. Sitting on my deck, watching sunset with my wife, got my yellow pad out, and there was just something. This was 7, 8 years ago, and I looked at her and I'm like, gotta call Robert. Called you up, you answered.
Yep.
And I'm like, get your pencil out, and what about if, so this guy's doing this, and
yep,
I think this guy's made the sophomore jump, so do you think this? And you're like, you know what, yeah. And I just, we are watching this beautiful sunset and we're on the deck and had that thought, let's give Robert a call.
Yep. And we've been doing this. So it's time to record one, right? It's time for us to just put what we talk about out there. On Saturday, they had an open practice, a full open practice. They invited donors and they invited media to observe. Media were told to put all filming down after like the 7th period. And anytime they were going to an 11-on-11, it was time to no longer film things. They don't want it out there. They don't want it talked about, and we're not going to talk about it. But we can talk about players who looked good, what freshmen, you know, what freshmen looked good, what this, who jumped out. So we're just going to go through everything here. We're going to go position by position, and just go through what you thought, what you saw, what I thought, what I saw, and we'll just get through the whole thing. I want to start with freshmen, though, and my first text to you from my side of the stands to you sitting there in the north end zone was two words, Matt Bailey, with I think 2 exclamation points, because he was the first guy who stuck out to me. So I'll get to what I thought of him, but what were your thoughts on Mr. Moline, Matt Bailey, on Saturday?
Yeah, he looked like he belonged.
Yeah. Yes.
And I did not realize he was out there until I got your text. I don't know who I was watching. And then the second I see that, I look up, and might have been Sikowski, a little play action, and I think he tried to hit Griffin Moore in the flat, and Bailey jumps in front of it, knocks it down, and I said to my wife, he kind of looks like Sidney Brown right there.
Yes.
And then, one of the last players picked.
Yes.
Recruiting-wise, no offers, and yeah, he was,
I was hoping that you
that with those safeties, with the safeties being gone.
Yes.
You know, Sidney, Quan, Kendall's, all those guys, we need some.
Yeah, somebody's going to have to step in and start next season. Yes, yes. Well, I was hoping you got my text before that play, because I was hoping you would, like, see my Matt Bailey text, and then the very next play is Matt Bailey breaking on a ball and batting it down, and
Yeah, it was.
Yes, that was great. I'm so glad you saw it, because, you know.
Yeah, great minds think alike.
Yes, yes. So, I was very excited about that. Again, I worry sometimes that I get too, like, as I wrote, like, confirmation bias, to where, like, I gave Matt Bailey a high rating in my recruiting ratings. I have him the 7th best player in the class, and And, you know, obviously I want that to be correct when I take a kid who was a zero star and say he's, you know, he's really good. I obviously want that to come through. And so then I'm watching practice like, I think it's happening. But yeah, he was legitimately good. And with Sid, you know, they'll take it easy with all starters like Sid before the season because he doesn't really need much prep or anything else. You know, with Sid out or whatever for that practice, you know, I have Bailey running with the ones at strong safety. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And yeah, I'm excited to see what this kid can do. So any other freshmen that I'll just let you take one, like any other freshmen that stuck out to you, that surprised you, that caught your eye on Saturday?
Well, I thought the McCantos hit.
Yes.
Beam a lot. On our backup 235-pound tailback was interesting. And
yep.
That would be a love to have been in the locker room for watching that one. And then a kid that just really intrigues me, got him at corner, and he's 6'4". And listening to the defensive back coaches, and then I think he got burnt by I think Hightower.
Yeah, he fell down on that one.
Talking's like this kid's played football 1 year, and he looks the part, and that's what's going to be so interesting. Some of these guys aren't rated very high, no offers, and then we don't know.
Yep.
A year or two down the road, and maybe they do have a great job, particularly, you know, Coach Walters, who I just think is a stud in that defensive staff, for they're able to find these gems, and then there they are. And that was, McCantos, and I think it was Rooks. Then I've been reading about Jockers, but then going over to offense, freshman-wise, Hank Beatty stood out there, quicks and catches the ball, and he was impressive.
That was probably the biggest ooh from the crowd in the north end zone was when Beatty made that one move to break that one route to the outside. You could hear everybody in the north end zone like, ooh, like, oh, this guy's got some wiggle. So, yeah, that was interesting. It was interesting to see how many reps he got with the ones. Now, sometimes, as I wrote, sometimes it's just like one practice that they say, you know what, how about we get this kid, we get him some time with, you know, with the one receivers, and let's just see what he can do. And then the next day he's back with the third string or whatever. So it's hard. You can't really just watch one practice and say, oh, wow, this kid's getting, you know, it might mean something, but it might just be, hey, we wanted to get that on film, see what he looked like. So we don't really know, but it would be very encouraging because we need other receivers to step up. You know, we need other guys. So I think for me, like, Joey Okla caught my eye somewhat, just of the freshman offensive linemen. You know, they didn't play that much. And again, this wasn't a scrimmage, so it's just bump drill. There's no tackling. But when you watch the linemen, they're hitting. Like, it's bump drill is not the linemen like only, you know, stand there with their arms behind their back or something. They're hitting, and I thought Joey Okla looked pretty good. And then yeah, I agree with you on McCantos that I mean, come on, you're a former football coach. You know that, like, I don't want to go too deep in the play. It was just they were doing bump drill, which is just you don't tackle the guy. Sometimes you make contact to show that this tackle would have been made. Sometimes it's basically two-hand touch, but you're not tackling. Well, you know, McCray was running, and McCantos gave him a bit of a shoulder and knocked him down, and it was a little like, ooh. But as a football coach, you have to kind of love that because football has to be played right on that edge of, you know, aggression, right? Like, you know, you don't want to get any penalties or anything else. But I'm saying, you know, when a freshman has this, like, I'm not letting this guy past me kind of feeling, that's the kid you want out there on the field.
Yeah, and I would be so curious to what the reaction was afterwards in the locker room. You know, player-led teams, coach get involved. Palcho comes up to McCantos and says something. McCantos goes up McCrane apologizes. He didn't back then. That's where, I think the coaches have a great handle on this. And
sure.
Yep. But then when Coach Bielema was speaking to us afterwards, he kind of made reference to that, laughing about that. And that's just why it was. I'm high on McCanthos. Yep. I think he's going to be a player. And
yep.
Oh, who knows? Just could have been a one thing. And maybe,
You're right.
Got a little aggressive.
It's so fascinating how, like, sometimes, I don't know. Before covering camp and before covering practices, I wouldn't have thought things like that mattered at all. It's like, who's bigger, stronger, faster, right? Like, the receivers are going to be this, you know. I never realized how much mentality was part of it. Aggression is part of it. Guys who just dance around the pile and won't get in there are the guys who aren't going to play, and guys who will be aggressive on tackles and will be aggressive on even drills where you're not tackling are the ones who play right at that edge that coaches want. So it's always fascinating to watch that kind of thing because, you know, the guys who play are the guys who react quickly and aggressively to every situation. And you can see that on the practice field, even when they're not tackling.
Yeah. And we had, this is a billion years all the way back to Zook staff that we got to be close with Dan Dish, and Martez Wilson comes in top 5-10 players in the country, and it's just a little tad disappointing, and Dish is like, he doesn't want to stick his nose in there.
Yeah,
we've got to get him to be more exactly what you're talking about. That's not the type of kid he is. He's got all the potential in the world, but until we can, you know, we tried to humiliate him. We the players are on him, but he's just not one of those guys that until he can just be salvageable with that regard. But yeah, you are right on about the aggressiveness.
The guy I always think about with that is BJ Bello. So, you know, and this is probably an example that it can come later in life kind of thing. BJ Bello was recruited as kind of defensive back / linebacker, ended up more linebacker. And, you know, we had full practice access back then, and the coaches would just constantly, like, BJ, if you're not going to get into that pile, you're not going to play. Like, if you're just watching the other guy make the tackle, and, like, if he doesn't, I'll get in there, you're just not going to play. Like, constantly over and over with him, this is why you're not playing. You have to get in there. You have to stick your nose in there. Like, we cannot play you if you're just going to watch. And he ends up transferring to Illinois State, and then what, has 4 or 5 years in the NFL, something like that, 3 or 4 years in the NFL, to where it just clicked, and he found the aggression, and he found, you know, he had the athleticism, he had the length, he had everything. He just didn't have, he just couldn't play because he just wasn't there. And you can talk about, you know, development here. You can talk about coaches. Maybe the Illinois State coaches got better at understanding what needed to be communicated to him to get him to play on that edge. But at Illinois, I observed it. I wasn't surprised when the coaches said it of like, if you're just like, you know, they're doing a full tackle scrimmage and you're kind of, you have like two hands on the backside of the pile. You're just like, I think he's down. If you're not diving in there because maybe you can prevent one more foot from the lineman, you're just not going to play. That's how football is. That's how it's going to be played. And, you know, that's what led to him not playing here, but then playing at Illinois State and then using that athleticism several years in the NFL. So I think about that stuff all the time when I'm at practice.
Yeah, light bulb just went off. And at what point do you – sometimes you just give up on kids.
Yep.
May take them to their junior year, but then sophomore year, they're just not feeling it, not doing it, and quit, transfer, and then it comes on later, and that's, you just
and
hope that it happens sooner than later.
Yeah, and we've seen it with, like, kids in a game that just have a moment that, like, wait, I can do this. Like, you know, just the confidence hits of, like, I think I can be pretty good at this, and then boom, they take off from there. It's just, look at Kirby last year. Yes, some of that is Ryan Walters figuring out what makes Kirby tick, finding a way to feature him, finding him a way. You know, that's coaching, right? Like, that is, look, this kid does this. He's rangy. He has great instincts. We're going to put him back at free, not strong. And we're just going to let him roam around and play with those instincts. We won't get really mad when he maybe gets out of position here or there, because he's going to be a playmaker for us. And boom, he's a third round draft pick, first team All Big Ten. So part of that is coaching, but part of it is just you loved seeing the light bulb come on for certain kids. They have it, haven't shown it yet, but it's still there and it's still possible, which is why I struggle to give up on anybody of like, okay, yes, 3 years of bad, but wait till this year. Maybe the light bulb comes on.
Thank goodness those coaches don't listen to you and I, because I had, I looked back at my list and Coach Bielema is going to have to get rid of some guys and hit the 85 scholarship. He was on my list.
Yep. I had 47th last year in the 90 lineup.
Yep. And yep. He's, is he receiver, corner, safety? And these are a list of guys, and most of them are gone.
Yep.
Transferred out, whether they saw the light or were kind of pushed out, but he was one of them. And yeah, thank goodness I was not part of that staff.
Yep. Okay, let's go position by position and just like, you know, what you saw, what you think, what I thought, you know, how we're feeling about things. We'll start with quarterback, because everybody always wants to start with quarterback. I'll let you go first on this one. Your thoughts on quarterbacks on Saturday.
Okay, I am much higher on DeVito than I think most are. And I went back and watched some of the bad games at Syracuse. I think his sophomore year he was good, and then the next 2 years he's hurt. He got a horrible offensive line, and to me, and I think the coaches know this, things I've listened to him, they need to almost neuter him, detoxify and quit being such a gunslinger and making more of a game manager. When I think of game manager, kind of maybe not very talented and just don't make mistakes. He's got some talent, and you know, comparing him to Brandon Peters, his release is so much quicker. Decisions are quicker. Where he gets in trouble, like the Syracuse games, horrible offensive line, and they break down. He runs inside, outside, to the sideline, throws off his back foot because he's got this great arm, and just throws it into a tight window and gets picked off. So I think they know that, and listening to Coach Bielema talk about that, watching him in the spring game, and I think there are going to be some moments where he thinks his arm's a little better than what it is, but you know, he got such a strong running game and the play action, and he moves so well. So, and to me, it's the whole key to the whole season. Can our offense, when they put an extra guy in the box, they've loaded the box, can we move the ball by throwing it, getting receivers to beat one-on-one coverage? And there's I'm a big play action guy, and DeVito would be so much better than Peters at that. So I know Williams can beat guys. Can we find somebody else? But I just, if DeVito can be more of a game manager than gunslinger, I'm all for him.
Yeah. I think the reason I keep screaming like Sitkowski is still in this, it's still a competition, yes, the coaches, I can't remember if it was Bielema or Lunny, who, you know, they've used the term gunslinger with the media when talking about Tommy. Like, you know, they've noted that he might be a bit of a wild card. And so when I think back to, say, like, I always think of the Minnesota game last year, which people were mad at Tony Peterson. In fact, it was my article after the game. I believe a lot of that was coming from Bielema of saying, look, we're up 14-0. They're not moving the ball. The only way we lose this game is if we like throw a pick at our own 35 or something. That's the only way we're going to lose. And so we're not going to do it. And everybody's going to be screaming like, do something more with the offense, Tony Peterson. And I'm of the opinion, it's like, look, we are doing prevention of one thing. A bad interception or a fumble here is the only thing that kills us. Otherwise, we're going to win this game. And so, you know, because of those decisions that we saw last year and being conservative with the lead and, you know, avoid turnovers at all costs, and Chase Hayden doesn't play after one single fumble because you can't fumble my football. Because of that, Art is probably the more game manager, and DeVito is more the, to quote the coaches, gunslinger. And so that's why I think even if DeVito could throw for two touchdowns and 212 yards and Sitkowski might only be complete 55% and 138 yards, if DeVito's throwing two picks and Art's throwing zero, they would go with Art in those two scenarios, even though it's less yards and less touchdowns. And so that's where I keep coming down on the quarterbacks is, yes, he's making plays, and yes, look, I'm the Illinois football fan in the stands, and I see him hit Isaiah Williams on that one play, and it's like, okay, with Tommy forever, and this is going to be it, and he transferred to Illinois and had this breakout senior season, and everybody remembers why he was a four-star in high school and blah, blah, blah. I can get behind that. I just – my opinion toward the whole thing is game management was so important last year. I think a lot of that came from Brett Bielema, and I think it's going to come from him this year that, look, three interceptions in one game is death for us, and we can't have it. Even if you throw for five touchdowns, you can't throw those three interceptions. And that's why I see Art as still in it. Now, again, as I've said 100 times, like, what did Art start the Wisconsin game 2 for 18 or whatever it was? Like, if that's the Art, then no, it's going to be Tommy and everything else. But that's my opinion on quarterbacks is, I'm trying to watch for the game management and the tuck and run moments more than I am the big plays because that's the scary thing. So that's my opinion on quarterbacks. I don't know what your thoughts are.
No, we're right there. And when did Peters get hurt last year? First game.
Yeah, first game. What? Yep.
Second quarter.
Yes.
I mean, and then he's out. So yep. There's your second. There's Art comes in, and you hope that doesn't happen to DeVito, but it did last year, and we may need him. And I think we're on the same, yep, same page with that game management wise.
Yep. Okay. Running back. I don't even know if we need to talk about it, right? Like,
no,
everybody knows. I mean, loaded. The question is who's three. Looks like maybe Reggie Love, could be Chase Hayden. Maybe Loughery gets some snaps. Hard to exactly say, but that's just arguing of like, who's going to get the 8% of the snaps or whatever it is. 92% will go to Chase Brown and go to Josh McCray. And, I don't think we even need to talk about it. We know what it is and we know what they can do. Right. I mean, I don't have any other thoughts besides that. I don't know about you.
No, they are just, again, Brown did not play a whole lot start of the season. He was injured also. I don't know what game it was early, maybe the Nebraska game, and just have to hope that our starting quarterback and our all Big Ten running back are stay healthy, which they should. I'm hoping, knock on wood.
Yep. So let's go to receiver. I think it's a given, the first play for the first string on Saturday, like I think it's a given that 1, 2, 3 are Isaiah Williams, Casey Washington, and Pat Bryant. I don't think anybody would hesitate to say that they're 1, 2, 3. If you had to bet money on who's the fourth receiver, not tight ends or not running backs, but like who's number four in receiver number of catches, who would you guess right now?
I'm going with Hightower. Hmm. And I would love to walk into their office someday, 2 years from now, and was like, what happened last year? Mm-hmm. There had to be some knocking of heads. You're not, I don't know. It's none of my business. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it was just one of those things down the road. You might find out, right, but he redshirted and he's back. And I think he's even got, like, I got it down on my list. He's got another year of eligibility too. If he does he played 4 games and then the COVID thing, they've got him listed,
yep,
as a senior. It doesn't matter, but bottom line is, I love what the coaches are saying about him this year. He looked good Saturday, and there's even a chance he might have more than Patrick Bryant. And I love, I love Bryant.
Yeah.
And it's just like, the Jonah Morris guy coming in. Mm-hmm. We missed out on Jafar Armstrong last year, and I thought he was you know, going to be a difference maker, and got hurt. And you know, watching some tape of him, they got these, you know, Kamari Thompson, fast at Missouri. They got these tall, strong, jump up in the air receivers. And between those three, I hope one of them, and I'm guessing Hightower, but love Patrick Bryant. And yeah, we really need Hightower and Bryant to one of those guys to come through and get open, beat one-on-one coverage,
yep,
and catch the ball.
Yep. I think one concern I have is who's blocking. You know, like we used Carlos Sandy on a lot of running plays last year. You know, he's 5'8", but he was one of our best blockers as a
he was, wasn't he? Yeah.
As a, you know, a wide receiver. Well, he left. So who's that receiver you can trust? I mean, even Donnie, they trusted in, you know, in the run game, is at least, you know, diving in front of a corner and getting some amount of stop to keep him from, you know, getting to Chase Brown, heading up the middle or whatever. But I don't know who that's going to be this year. I don't, you know, it's not something we can really see in practice, but that's a big concern of mine. Cause look, when it's a running play and you have two wide receivers out there, they are both quote unquote linemen, and whether they get a chip on that corner or safety or they don't can mean the difference between 4 yards and 19 yards. And you got to have somebody who can, who knows what they're doing and isn't a swinging gate. So, so yeah, that's probably my concern. And I don't know who those receivers are going to be who can be part of the blocking game.
Yeah. Even, you've referenced, is it Miles Scott?
Yes.
He I think does a decent job of,
I think that's why he started that one game. I started Rutgers or whatever. I think that was a, hey, this kid is giving his all in during on run plays, and we're going to get him on the field because of that.
Yeah. He looked good spring game too. A couple of nice catches.
Yep. Yep. So yes, but that's my answer to the number four guy would be Miles Scott. He's just my next walk on that I think can be a star kind of guy. Like the way I felt about Fedge or Donnie is the way I feel about Miles Scott. So, if since we're going on the record here, you're on the record with Hightower, and I will put a special note next to your Hightower of saying he might be the number three receiver. I'm going Miles Scott. He's my guy for this spot. So I feel like we're just getting to tight end and offensive line because that's such a big deal with this, you know. Let's do tight end first, and then I'll give you my spiel. So I'll let you go first on tight end. Your thoughts on the tight end after Saturday, after the spring game, going into the season. Your thoughts on tight ends.
I go back to recruiting rankings, and Luke Ford, one recruiting ranking publication, had him like one of the top three tight ends in the country. And then Tip Ryman comes from what, South Dakota, 8-man football, and no offers. And I've got down on my own little special depth chart, I've got Ryman actually ahead of Ford. And I know Luke got some NFL looks, and I would love for both of those guys. You know, that might be the first formation, 12 personnel. And then you've got Marquez that can be a backup. That's, you know, 6-year guy, but I feel good about both. I mean, the fact that Ryman's come on, Barker drove me nuts. Sometimes caught the ball, but just so inconsistent blocking. And then is he going to get a 15-yard penalty after catches the ball?
Yeah.
And, but with Ryman, Ford, and Marquez, I feel pretty good.
Yeah, I did some watching, some spot shadowing of Griffin Moore because this is the year that he needs to.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, you got to get a blocker out there. Probably unfortunate. I don't want to hang it all on one play. One of the notes I made as I was watching, I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch Griffin Ford this play. And it just happened to be this specific play where he whiffed on a block and it was blown up in the backfield. Like just straight. The guy starts leaning left. He leans too much and just stepped inside and went untouched straight into the backfield. So, that's going to be a big thing is finding blockers for those rooms. I mean, just, you know, we can't beat up Ford and Ryman too much You know, they're going to have to rotate some tight ends if they're going to be blocking, you know, with two tight ends on the field. So you're going to have to find these blockers. Marquez can do some of it, but there's got to be a fourth guy. Maybe it's Henry Boyer. The coaches keep talking about him. Maybe it's Owen Anderson. Maybe it's Griffin Moore. But they're going to have to find somebody. They're going to have to find somebody to do that. All right, let's go to offensive line because this is where I want to talk the most. Okay. There's this growing confidence I sense from my friends, people I talk to, people I interact with, of confidence in the rebuilt offensive line. And that confidence itself has me worried because this is still a line that loses Vedarian Lowe, that loses, you know, to the NFL, that loses Doug Kramer to the NFL, that loses Jack Bedovenak, but also loses other guys who had started games. Jarasotti started 3 games last year. You know, there's a decent number of players who headed out the door, 2 of them being drafted. So, like, here's how I always say it, and you and I have had this exact conversation before. If we were talking about Minnesota and I told you, yeah, Minnesota had those 2 linemen drafted, lost a 3rd starter, and also, you know, all they really have coming back is these 2 guys who were guard and tackle last year. They'll be both the tackles this year. They got a kind of a part-time starter from last year at center, and then they got 2 JUCO guys at guard and guard. And they got this other guy who had a broken ankle, and he might be one of the guards and this and that. I'm telling you, just based on that information, wow, Minnesota offensive line, huge step back this year. Huge step back. 2 NFL guys, 2 guys picked in the NFL draft. Any line who loses those guys either has to replace immediately with NFL guys, or that line will take a big step back. And when you have 2 starters returning and you lose all these seniors, it's going to take them a while to gel, to know who the guy is, to know this. So I'm struggling with some of the confidence I hear in the offensive line because there's a long distance between, these guys are coming back and we should be fine and the JUCOs have filled the holes that were there and actually having a productive running game on the road at Indiana on Labor Day weekend. So that's my concern with the offensive line. Tell me where you're at.
Okay, life is about expectations. And you know, I talked 2 years ago, 3 years ago, hey, when this special group of linemen start as freshmen, when they graduate, the cliff, you know,
yep.
Levy's still going to be here.
Yep.
Will we win 2 games? And then even last year, okay, Pouchel's gone and just, it's going to be horrible. So my expectations, the offensive line would just, it's going to be the worst unit on the team. And then literally after watching the first series spring game, I texted one of my buddies that meme of some guy coming in the house. He's got a briefcase and he takes 3 steps and then just falls in the ground. Like, God, I'm home. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did because we got 2 JUCOs. You don't ever hit on JUCO linemen. I mean, think back the last 10 years.
Yes.
It's been a couple. But then
you're
I'm
right.
Watching,
you're right. We could name so many JUCO linemen, like the entire 2015 class. Yes.
They don't work out. And even the first, maybe the first 2 plays, Adams whiffs at left tackle. Shimon Cooper went by him on pass blocking. But then you watch more and more, and it's like, oh my goodness. Now Chrysler, he needs to lose 30 pounds. And then we talked with our, you know, we love this day, updated roster day, and says that he's lost his 30 pounds. And then watching him Saturday was night and day from the spring game. Slaughter could have started. So it's just the fact that those, like I've got down on my notes, did we hit on the 2 JUCOs? And we might have. And if we did, that's big. But then the other thing, we really haven't touched on this, I am as bullish on this coaching staff as I have seen since, you know, I was talking with a couple of buddies. They're like, so since when?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, there's guys that I've liked, position coaches or coordinators, but now it's just 1 year. And particularly on the defensive side, to me, they're as good as since it's gone back to the Makovic years. And one of my players that I coached actually started on, like, he never lost to Ohio State. I ran into him and Tim Simpson this year after a game. And they're like, you know, we beat, you know, it was like beat Ohio State 6 out of 7 years. And the coaches were this and that. And I just think Walters and Boo and Kane are just really good. And I love our offensive line coach. And he's talking about getting, you know, they get double teams and physical and then get vertical. And it's hard to do. Well, this is the second year of the system for all these coaches. And so my worry, and I love this kid, but is Pilstrom. And that's what I was going to ask. If you've talked to Marty O'Donnell, what his thoughts were after the spring game, but I just felt really good about those four positions. And then Pilstrom just, I just wasn't as high on him as the other spots, but okay, he's going to get coached up. This is his first time, you know, and the snaps were horrible. That didn't bother me. He's nervous. He's a people pleaser. I think he wants to do well, but it's just, I know they tried to get a, talked about a transfer, you know, center in the portal. And, but then they got to work with him this summer. And if he, to me, that's the key. If he's just serviceable, our line can be okay. But I totally understand where you're coming from looking at it, the Minnesota side. And that's why Vegas has got us, you know, 4.5 wins. And people are like, you know, Illinois is only going to win 2 games this year, 3 or 4. Because look what they've got coming back offensive line. It's like, yeah, you're counting on 2 JUCO guys. Well, yeah, I am. After watching that spring game and now that scrimmage on, I'm high on our offense. I totally get where you're coming from.
Yep.
But I'm cautious. Let's say this. I'm cautiously optimistic. Paltrow was not good last year at right guard. I mean, he was borderline horrible because he was hurt.
Yeah.
And his PFF scores, I mean, just pass blocking and tackle was just like, oh, my gosh. And Pearl was a little tentative. We got second-year Pearl. Healthy Paltrow, who I think will get drafted. Slaughter, I think, is okay. And then you got the two JUCOs. And then if Pilstrom can just be maybe – if that's our weak link, I think we're going to – and there again, it's all the expectations compared to what I thought it was going to be to where they're at now.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I went and looked up the names of the JUCOs in the 2015 class that I referenced. You know, and I just remember how we were like Zach Heath was one of them. Remember, we're just counting on Zach Heath coming in and being a starter. And then the other two were Jordan Fagan, and then Connor Brennan. So, you know, that was the year that it's like, okay, yes, losing all offensive linemen, but plugged 3 gaps with this, and then also plugged the 2 tight end gaps with Ainsley Johnson and Andrew Davis from JUCO. So all of that run blocking stuff that we were concerned about, boom, 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 plugged gap, plugged gap, plugged gap, and it did not, did not turn out that way. So yes, so I'm still hesitant, and yes, like, just Doug Kramer was really good and really experienced. Okay, it's hard to replace a center that is that experienced and that solid. To where he gets drafted, even though he's wildly undersized. It's really hard to replace that. And so there has to be, you know, there's just no way Alec Pilstrom is going to give us the exact same season as Doug Kramer last year. So it's going to be a big step back at center. It just is. It's not an insult to Pilstrom. It's a compliment to Kramer. Vedarian had his best year last year, really blossomed under Bart Miller. It got him drafted. You know, he got his body changed into what the NFL liked, and, you know, he finally had this big blossoming moment. I think he was he honorable mention one team, and was he third team Big Ten on one of the lists?
Anyway,
I mean, he just had a really good season, and so it's just so hard to take guys like that who then get drafted and say, oh, we'll be fine. You know, Julian Pearl by next year will be great at left tackle. In the first few games this year, in his first games at left tackle, after being a guard and then some right tackle last year, it's going to be tough. He's going to whiff on somebody. It's just going to be an adjustment. And so I'm a little afraid of the first month of the season of like, hey, this running game, it can be so good, but it's a new offense. and the blocking just isn't quite there yet, and we're punting a lot, and you know, the fan base gets restless. So I'm still concerned. However, yes, spring game Zy Chrysler, spring game Isaiah Adams was certainly not spring game Zach Heath, spring game Connor Brennan, Jordan Fagan. They appear to be two JUCOs who can play and play soon. I think they're clearly ahead of some. I think there's six guys when you include Slaughter that are up here on this tier, and then a bunch of others, and you know, not sure who does next. So, yeah, you're right. Coaching staff, Bart Miller, everybody's going to show their mettle of you know what they can do by if they could rebuild and keep this running game going in the next season.
Because here's the other thing, and this is kind of a hot take, and my buddies are like, you are way too optimistic. I thought, watching that spring game, that was the best second and third string defense I'd seen in years. Everyone remembers Isaiah Thomas beating number 22, and I felt bad for him. But the year before, they're like, well, Brandon Peters had this great game. I mean, that defense was – that guy's just – there, you go there, and this is what you do. They had no clue what they were doing. And then watching both sides, you know, grading, and it's like, okay, Alec Bryan, defensive end, pretty good. Sen McConnell, he's doing some things here. I thought Kurtz, he showed. Those linebackers were okay. And these, you know, redshirt freshmen, Curry and Dede Snyder, they at least were there. And there were some spring games. It's like there's never –
yes.
Never been a third down on offense.
Yes.
Run the ball 8 yards and then first down. And it was like, okay, we didn't gash them as much as I thought we would. Is that because they're offensive line? It's like, no. After watching the tape over and over, backup, defensive line, linebacker, it's just they weren't as – I didn't think they were as bad as other years, second, third stringers. We go to Rantoul and watch. And then, but I could be wrong on that. But I just cautiously optimistic that the offensive line is going to be okay.
Well, let's use that as a transition to talk defensive line. And tell me what you thought of T-Ra Edwards in that game. Because of that spring game, I moved Edwards to basically my starting nose tackle on my depth chart. Just, again, my depth chart is kind of like my opinion of where it all sorts out. And so... I'm not saying he was the starter, but just felt like after watching his performance in that game that he would eventually land this starting job. So we haven't seen this. You know, he's had the knee injury. He was in green on Saturday, which is encouraging because it means he's close to being back. But, you know, it means he can practice, but just not with contact. What were your thoughts on Edwards after rewatching the spring game?
Yeah, he I guess I could say I was a tad disappointed after the spring game in Edwards, Avery, Virtus. It's just like they're just big and slow. And if you're going to be a nose guard, you can't get blocked one-on-one by the center. And it's just, I realize that we don't get up the field like, you know, take a gap and go, and we're more, you know, read the head and you're two gap and, Edwards has got 4 years left, and it's like, how did he not play at Northwestern? Agreed.
Offensive or defensive line coming up, or maybe they just didn't have a nose position for him that, you know, like as big as he is. I don't know. I don't either. I don't get it, because how is he still out there?
Yeah, he was better than I thought, but I guess I'm disappointed in Virtus that, and then today, looking at the roster and hearing that, you know, listening to Coach JMO talk about how Calvin's lost his 30 pounds. And we are talking about the defensive line. It's like, thank goodness. That's why I was talking to my wife during the name, watch 93, watch him here. And we're sitting in the end zone, and it's like, he's a new man, his quickness, his intensity. And this is huge. Now, is he going to play every down? No, but I was a big Rod Perry fan last year. Didn't get near the credit. I thought he was great. Yep. And then watching the spring game, there was a huge drop off for the other nose guards. But then Calvin Avery, to me, might've even looked better than Perry on Saturday, lost the weight. And you listen to Coach Walters afterward, it's like, when he's disciplined and he does his technique, he could be special. Yep. And that's just, that's huge for him to lose that weight.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's a player who could change the outlook of the defense, it's Avery. It's Avery. Like, if, you know, 4-star coming in, had the quick twitch jump off the line, you know, all these highlights in high school of really, really bursting into people and they don't know what hit them from a massive guy, you know, way too sprite for somebody who was 330 pounds or whatever in high school. And, you know, that's why it was a 4-star. That's why LSU and USC offered or whatever. You know, all the potential has always been there. And let's be honest here, right? Hey, kid, you're a senior. You've had 3-4 years on the field, actually. You know, he's a 2-to-play-1 guy, so he has one more year on the field. You probably have the strength, movement, body frame to play in the NFL. They like somebody who has this kind of burst for somebody who's 325 pounds. Here's your opportunity. Want to go make millions of dollars? Here you go, 12 games. Go make millions of dollars. Here's your opportunity. That's just what it is for Calvin this year. It just, that's, here it is laid out in front of him. Has been a disappointment so far. Let's just be honest, for a 4-star coming in. Rob Perry played in front of him, but here's your chance. This is 100%. Just see what Kirby just did? Kirby has $5.6 million in his pocket or whatever. He just did that based on 9 football games. You get 12 this fall. Here's your chance. Go do it. It would be so much for this defense if he could be that guy.
No, no doubt there. I'm hoping that happens. And then going to the defensive ends, I still have a hard time calling them ends. I call them tackles, but that's okay. And,
I just go with defensive linemen. I call Newton, and yes, I call them. Yes, that's why I've gone with my RDL and LDL thing of like, mm-hmm. There is the right defensive lineman and the left defensive lineman. Sometimes they're an end, sometimes they're a tackle, sometimes they're both. I'm just going to call them DLs.
Well, I've actually got it. I've got down in my little notes here, my depth chart, strong defensive end, weak side defensive end, just because Randolph weighs a little bit more than Newton. And then my hope is, you know, because those guys are, you know, I hope they stay next year also, but they're going to be in the NFL. They're good.
Definitely.
Concern was who's backing them up. But they're again watching the spring game, and that is hard to tell, but you know, poor Jamal Woods is coming back for a 6th year. Wasn't he his freshman year? Like, he got all Big Ten freshman honorable mention or something.
Yes, he was on one of those
6 years
lists.
Ago.
Yes, 6 years ago. Yes, 2017.
But he gets hurt. He's never not been not hurt. So if he could stay healthy, I think that would be huge. Or can you know, we didn't talk about Wilkins, the Vanderbilt transfer, who started 2 years at Vanderbilt against SEC offensive line, and could he come in and back up? Let's say Avery's doing a great job at nose, and Edwards is healthy and doing a great job. Could Wilkins come in and take some snaps for Randolph at that strong defensive end?
Yep.
And I think his updated weight, let me see, 363, 315, and then Randolph's at 305. So is Wilkins quick enough where he could play some? And then Bryce Barnes, what a great story.
Yep.
Oh, was it 255, and he's up to 280 now, and athletic, was a tight end, and could play. Kurtz does okay. McConnell, I thought, did all right. So maybe our depth's better than I hoped, but we need Randolph and Newton to stay healthy.
Yep. Yeah, snaps-wise, like, I've referenced the PFF snap counts a lot. You know, last year was – Randolph missed, 2.5 or 3 games or whatever with that one injury. So he only had 446 snaps. You know, Newton ended up with 611 snaps. And if you think, you know, Kearney had 800 with his backup having like 70. So you think of this as like having like 870 defensive snaps. You know, they're playing that much. Avery did have 201 snaps last year. It's just interesting to think of how that's going to go up. So, you know, whoever's that starter, whoever is this, they're going to get more. You're going to have more Newton. You're going to have the same this, but you've lost all of Roderick Perry's 503 snaps from last year. So yes, so that's the question. Okay. Jamal Woods, 158 snaps last year. Can he play 300? Can you get 75 snaps out of said McConnell? Can you get it out of Wilkins? Do they lower the snap count for Newton and Randolph to keep them fresh and keep them, you know, away from injuries and give more to, you know, somebody like Woods in his senior year? That's the thing to watch is, you know, that's a position you can wear down over a game. And, you know, you've got to have those backups to keep the guys fresh. All right, let's I'm going to flip the page here. Let's move on to outside linebackers. Seth Coleman. I'll just say this. This is my biggest concern on the entire team. This is where it's hard to replace Kirby, and we'll talk about free safety. Offensive line, I'm scared of, you know, just we'll take six games before they gel together and like, I thought we were double. Wait, that was, oh yeah, you're right. And meanwhile, you know, Tommy DeVito's picking himself up off the turf after a fifth sack or whatever. So those are my concerns, but Gay, who was awesome in November last year, Carney, who was really good all season, both gone. How do we get pressure from the edge? Are you concerned as I am? Because that's where I'm like, oh man, what if opposing quarterbacks have all day to just stand there?
Yeah, I'm hoping and listening. This is by listening to the coaches talk that Seth Coleman turns into the man this year. He did beat out Gay.
Yeah.
And then got hurt, and then Gay took the next step from there, but Coleman beat him out. And then going back to these coaches, these are the two of the spots that I think these guys are as good as they get coaching wise with Kane and we'll talk about Boo here in the inside linebackers, but I think Coleman's going to have a breakout year. He was always the great athlete, but maybe not strong enough. And then listening to Coach Kane talk, he's got the power element. And then you have to hope that Zeke, this is the second year in this system. And, you know, these guys aren't redshirt freshmen. One game years ago, Lovey's playing. There's a true freshman, 17 years old, going against like one of Minnesota's NFL wide receivers and did okay, but just 17 years old. Where these guys, the COVID year, Coleman and Zeke, I mean, they're grown men. They've been in here for 4 years and 5 years. So I don't expect Zeke to come close to Carney, but just can you hold the edge? And then when you're in there, just not be a liability, just be okay. And then one of these inside linebackers, a harder somebody, can come off the edge and just be, I think Coleman's going to do good. And Holmes, I just hope, can be average, can be solid.
Yeah, you're going to have to get something from either the redshirt freshman Alec Bryant or the true freshman Gabe Akas, because, Ezekiel Holmes is not going to take every snap there, and those are the three guys. So, you know, this is the position where you're going to depend on freshmen. You know, even backing up Seth Coleman. Look, you know, Seth Coleman, I still got the snap counts here open. Gay played 623 snaps. Seth Coleman, 223. Okay, so let's say Seth Coleman gets those 625 snaps that Isaiah Gay had last year. Okay, well then who's getting the other? Is it Shimon? Is it Jared Beatty? Is it, you know, like DJ Johnson got a lot of snaps last year. He's gone. So who's that other guy there? You know, so you just start looking at, like, you start looking at the position, you start saying things like, oh man, are the two true freshmen going to have to play a lot? Like, is this, are we here and is it 2017 and we're talking about how Isaiah Gay and Bobby Rountree played a ton of snaps in September of that year? Isaiah Gay was still 17 years old when he's doing that. Like, you know, are we in that kind of scenario? Because somebody's going to have to take these snaps. So, there's just so many questions marked there. It feels like after the Indiana game, this could be the position we're talking about. Like, oh man, if we can't get somebody from the edge, or if we're like, what? But now that's our Achilles heel. Like, everybody is going to pick on us because of that one thing. So yeah, I'm super, super concerned, unfortunately.
Now one guy we haven't talked about is Deion Pate. So he's back in sixth year, and if the coaches didn't think he had some potential, they would have said, you know, Deion, great having you around, great kid.
Yep.
Good luck with life. And I remember they put him in years ago, pass rushing situations, interior line, and he's down, I think he's 265, so he could be he's kind of a tweener. He could be
if he could just be that third down pass rush specialist, like somebody to get pressure in the pocket. It doesn't even have to, like 9 sacks or something. Like, just get there, cause QB pressures, force QBs to bail out on the pocket and run, force a quick throw, force the check down, all that kind of stuff. Somebody from the edge is going to have to get to opposing quarterbacks, or, it'll look like, we can make Graham Mertz look like 2020 October Graham Mertz in the opener at Wisconsin, where it's just like, okay, so if I stand here, it's basically just practice, and I can just throw to wide open receivers all day long. I will do that. Thank you.
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah. Gosh, brutal.
Yep. So that's my fear, is like, oh man, like somebody. I mean, even Rod Perry was, he was that bull rush kind of guy that could collapse the center of a pocket. We're gonna get a lot of that from Randolph and from Newton, but from that edge. If I'm an opposing defensive coordinator, and this is not feeding them anything they already don't know, they know, hey, Illinois lost both Kearney and Gay. I wonder how they're going to try to replace that. Those edges look a little susceptible to me. Let's exploit that. So that's the concern there. Let's move on to linebacker, because I don't want to talk about it anymore, because I feel good about linebacker. I'll start with this. I was surprised that CJ Hart made the watch list or whatever. Was it for Butkus or what? I can't remember what award. CJ Hart was on the watch list, and Tariq wasn't, because Tariq had better stats last year. CJ Hart won one great game and a lot of potential, but I guess I was surprised by that. Were you surprised by that? Like, I feel a little better about Barnes coming into the season than I do Hart, just because all we know about Hart is one single Nebraska game.
Yeah, those three quarters, and then coming off an ACL, are you going to be like, I was just shocked that he looked as good as he did spring game, just from a physical standpoint. And yeah, Trick's the one that did such a good job of timing the blitzes up, like Penn State game.
Yes.
Shoot the gap, and they had that and then, Dark Angelo's going to be, but here it goes. You're getting sick of me talking about this, but I just think Andy Boo is just premier inside backer, because those guys are just so well coached.
They got a lot from Alec McCarron last year, as a walk-on. Like, they really, even when they lost Hanson, they were able to find the pieces last year to make the linebackers really good. You're right.
Yeah, they lose their first two starting. Both those guys were like, I think Hart could have been on the – no, there's no way he was on it last year. Anyway, they're two starting linebackers.
Yep.
And then they bring in their backups, and they look great. And that was just was their, like, coaching room. Bielema's got the defensive background, and Walters, Kane, Booth have all been defensive coordinators, and they are the real deal.
Yep. It's funny, we just mentioned the Wisconsin game in 2020, in reference to Graham Mertz and standing in the pocket throwing forever. That was also the breakout game for Tariq Barnes. That's the game that's constantly in my mind of like, man, why is this kid not getting a little more preseason hype? Because, as we've seen, when he's freed up to just go running back hunt, he can do this. Now, I know he had some tackling issues last year, and he had some, in the run game, just schematic stuff to take him out of the play that, some Iowa linebacker is going to fight through and make that tackle or whatever. So, he was just a sophomore. He had stuff to learn. But as he approaches his junior year now with those seasons under his belt, it's making me think, like, hey, maybe he should be getting a little more hype. He's the one person I think people aren't talking about that maybe should be talking about a little more.
Agree with you there, no doubt.
Yep. And then, yeah, behind him, I'm just curious to see who emerged. I agree. I think Dark Angelo is three. Those are the main three. There's going to be a fourth guy. Is it Kanena Odaluga? Is it Ryan Mead? Is it Dylan Rossiak? I don't know. It's hard to say who's going to be, you know. There's an opportunity maybe for one of the freshmen, maybe Hood, maybe James Kurtz. You know, somebody could jump into that. We need a fourth linebacker here. Who's the next guy up?
Yeah, curious. I'm not. That doesn't concern me. Just they'll get coached up.
Yep. Oh yes, yes. You're full on Andy Boo, so you can just.
Hey, oh, I man, am.
Throw a walk on out there. We'll be fine. okay, so let's go secondary then. So. Spoon given, we know Spoon starts. Spoon probably our best corner since Hobbs. Like, he should have a great junior season. He should be fine. Spoon, we know. Other side, what are your thoughts on if it's Taz? If Taz is the starter, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was scared to death if Taz was our starter based on last year's game. He just he was lost.
Yeah.
I almost felt sorry for him when Adams was hurt, and just he was one. This was like get written down. Weak corner is major concern, and then spring game, night and day, better. Still not great. And then listening to coaches this summer, and then watching him Saturday, he's playing with a confidence, and looks like he may be a little stronger. Technique was so much better. And, he's one I think just has to trust his coaches and trust the technique. And I was massively concerned watching those games last year. He just – there's no way he could play. And then massive improvement spring, and then it's looked good. But then, you know, they bring in the Juco – or not the Juco, the transfer Jennings, and didn't watch a whole lot of him, but seemed okay. Seemed like he fit in okay. And if Nicholson, you know, is he the third? You know, and then they like Strain. I know that.
Yeah, Strain was out on. He was in green on Saturday, so he wasn't scrimmaging
or something. But didn't see any of him. But Weatherspoon, yeah, hope he stays another year after this year, because I know he's on some NFL radars. But Nicholson better, Jennings. I know he hasn't. Got a lot of great experience at big time college football, but again, I didn't get to tape it, watch it, go through it, but it seemed like he fit. And Spoon's going to be, he could be all Big Ten, and then just hopefully the other guys get coached up.
Yep. I think my concern with the corners is tackling in the run game, because Tony Adams was really good at that. Tony Adams was a sure, he has some famous missed tackles in this. Any cornerback who's, you know, the last line of defense once the tailback gets the edge is going to be like, oh man, remember when Adams blew that play or whatever. But, you know, as far as coming up in run support and keeping, you know, making some one-on-one tackles in the flat and things like that, Tony Adams was pretty good. Let me look at this. Sort by total tackles. Adams was third last year. Third on the team in total tackles. So that's my concern with whoever replaced him. If it's Taz, if it's the Juco Jennings, if it's one of the freshmen, if it's McCantos, if it's, you know, if it's Tyler Strain, whatever. You know, it's a special kind of weapon to have a cornerback who's really good in run support. That's my concern out there. It's going to be a young guy opposite Spoon, and that guy's probably going to get burnt a couple times, and the fan base is going to be all over whoever Tony's replacement is. But that run game is probably a bigger concern than passing game at corner for me right now.
Let's hope that here again, Those guys get coached up second year in the system. And
yep. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. The thing we really haven't seen before, right? Like the second year in the system leap is we've seen a lot of third year leaps from a lot of coaches. And, you know, Turner went to a bowl in his third year, and Zook went to a bowl in his third year, and Beckman went to a bowl in his third year. We've seen a lot of that. We haven't seen the, wow, after a year in this system, like even the backups are significantly better. We just haven't really seen that before. Maybe the 2013 offense? No, that was a different system. That didn't matter. So, yes, if there's a second year in the system jump from a lot of defensive players, we can start feeling even better about this defensive coaching staff.
Yeah, because I don't think the quite had the talent level coming back just because the guys that have graduated, Perry, Carney, Kirby, Hansen, but the trade-off is the other guys coming back. That this is the second year, and that's the one of the intriguing aspects of watching this, that they've are the second year of the system, may not be as talented, but will they make up for that?
Yep. All right, let's get to safety, because I just want to talk about Quan and Sid, because that's the big you know me and Quan, right? Like you know he's a guy. Yeah. And you know I'm gonna like go like, you know, start predicting that he's Kirby and NFL things and everything else. You know where I stand. But yeah, we're not going to be in five defensive back look all the time. If we're playing Wisconsin, we're probably going to just go with two safeties and beef up around the line a little more. We're not going to have the three safeties on the field at all times. And when they do that, I feel like it will be Quan and Sid, that they will take Kendall Smith or whoever wins the free safety spot, pull them off the field, let Quan be like the free, you know, let Quan wander around deep and let Sid come up and run support, that type of thing. So again, just my guess and I don't know, but that's how I feel about them, because in my mind, when I'm looking at snap counts next year, I'm hoping to see one and two by far was Quan and Sid, because they never came off the field. Because they're just so good together. They are Antoine Patton and Ty Washington. They are, you know, a safety pairing that we can trust. They're Justin Harrison and Kevin Mitchell. Like I feel so good about senior years from Quan and Sid, just because they complement each other so well. And they can be such a big piece of this defense. So I am full 9.9 out of 10 confidence in both guys in the back of the defense.
I am absolutely with you on that. And looking back at notes from years before, Sidney Brown just drove me nuts. He's like Tasmanian devil. He just like was, he's talked about that, went 110 miles an hour. And it's like, do you read keys, or do you just try to go find somebody and knock him over? And now he's finally settled down, and yeah, the sky's the limit for those two guys. And that is my biggest concern. You know, he's the center, offensive line, and then on defense, Kirby was so good at free safety, and they moved him back here. And was that one of the big reasons that they had that huge, I don't think enough people talked about how good our defense was after the Virginia game. Scheme change, move some guys around a little bit, and what, like fourth, fifth, sixth in all the defensive categories. That's nuts compared to what we've been the last 7, 8, 9 years. How much of that was Kirby? And, you know, Kendall's 6-year guy. They said he's smart. He started doing well last year at the end of the season. He's just not the athlete that Kirby was. So that would be great where other guys could come through and just play Sidney and Quan back there, and then put another extra linebacker, extra outside backer in there, and then go from there. But then, and again, maybe Smith's going to be okay, and we'll be all right. That's what's fun about forecasting.
I mean, the best case scenario is Smith has a Kirby light season. Like, we can't say, oh, Kendall Smith's going to come in and he's going to be first team All Big Ten and a number three, you know, a third round draft pick. No, but he can, if he can hold that position down. He had a great pick in the spring game. Great read, you know, looked like Kirby, like saw the play developing, read it, was on the route before the receiver was, jumped it, ran. If he can do that, that's the best case scenario. I have this other scenario in my head. Okay, you ready for me to drink? Let's just have some Kool-Aid together. Like, I have this other scenario of, like, okay, what if Matt Bailey is Bennett Williams, like, ready as a true freshman to play, and you could develop three safeties with maybe Quan goes to free, and you develop Bailey and Quan and Sid. Like, I could go for that. That could be, like, if, you know, we never think about that. You know, Wisconsin will have a year from – just name some guy, some safety who came in, some linebacker who came in, is just like, oh man, as a freshman, they were really, really good. And they only played one freshman, but he was so good, and it kind of changed what they did. We don't think about that of late at Illinois, and it would be so great if we had a guy emerge at some of these positions where it could just be like, wow, I think he's playing. It was like Vontae, and when he was a freshman, like, oh gosh, stick him in the starting lineup for years, like, done. End. Next. Let's talk about the next thing. That is now a given for at least 3 years kind of thing.
Now did Bennett Williams stick out to you? That
yes,
freshman?
100%.
Did he?
100%.
I don't remember.
Yep. I can picture where I was on the hillside watching the practice there on Florida Avenue, you know, athletic fields or whatever. That big field at the south end, where the fans could be on that huge hillside that backs up to St. Mary's Road. I remember standing up there against that fence, watching Bennett Williams make some plays, and I was like, whoa, like, this kid is something. Like, he doesn't hesitate, he just reacts. Like, oh, I know what this is. You know, you watch reps, and then everybody's like, maybe this, and then I think I'm supposed to follow that. Wait, I'm supposed to wait for the tight end here? And he was just like, go, just react to everything. So, yes, I remember him like that. And so that's what, again, I'm drinking Kool-Aid. But, when I think about that,
my big mess up, you weren't at the practice, and I called you up. I said, Robert, I have never seen, there's a true freshman quarterback from California.
Is it Matt Robinson?
Good-looking kid. Standing talking with his mom. She had done this and coming back to Cal. And he was crazy. He completed 8 passes in a row. I remember watching Nathan Shieldhouse as a freshman, and somebody's like, I called the buddy up sitting in the stadium watching Nate Shieldhouse. I'm like, I think he's got something wrong with his arm. He's got to have an injury. And they're like, no, that's how bad he was as a freshman. And then to watch the California kid come in, and then, oh my gosh, I have never seen anything. And here's the man. 4 years. Well, that was just that one practice that he did well. And again, thank goodness the coaches don't listen to me.
You and I could sit here and list out. I remember the media day from that year where like Matt Robinson, it was the first time he got to talk to there were like 13 media interviewing Matt Robinson. And like the other quarterbacks all had like one person coming up to them, and it was,
he was that good.
Yes. And it was going to be like, that was the week you had called me, cause that was the week I had gone home when he started to emerge. So I was in this like, wait, what, who, Matt Robinson. But yes, I missed the camp performance of a lifetime.
I also remember us standing there and looking at each other and like, oh boy, Houston, we have a problem. Will we win a Big Ten game this year? And you said, this is the worst practice I have ever watched.
You're talking 2017?
Lovey's second year?
Yes, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, and we're just like, okay, who are the money games, the gimme wins, and can we beat them?
Yep, we were standing there watching. I think we saw like nine incompletions in a row.
That was just
– it was just so
unorganized.
Like, yes.
Players are running around. It's like a demolition derby. And it's like, this is almost embarrassing. This is.
Yep.
And,
yep.
Yeah. Thank goodness. It's that has changed.
Yep. Yep. That was, Yeah, that, I mean, that's why I think I went 2-9. Or yeah, I went 2-10 with my prediction for that year, just because of those two, like those two back to back days, where it was like, look, I've been, you know, mid-2000s I started going to Camp Rantoul, and this is now 2017, and I've never seen anything this bad, ever. I wrote it, I said it, I predicted it. Like it was just so very clear, and it was clear that the freshmen were the best players, you know.
Yeah,
like, I remember going home from that camp writing, like, I think they're going to have 15 freshmen that don't redshirt. Like, this is going to be insane. And they had 22 freshmen that didn't redshirt.
Mm-hmm.
That was just such a crazy time. Thankfully, Saturday did not appear like that at all. It's not a scenario of, oh dear Lord, how bad are we going to be? I also don't think this is like, you know, right now I would say the team I saw Saturday is a step back from the team I saw against Northwestern. There's a lot that it needs to prove to me. There's so many players missing that there's just question marks, and some of those are going to be answered with that kid wasn't ready and he never started a game after Wyoming and you know, they had to scramble and start playing freshmen kind of thing. So those things are going to happen. I don't have some big negative outlook after seeing this team in the spring and then seeing for the first time on Saturday, but I also don't have some like, oh dear Lord, we're going to win 8, maybe 9. Okay, fine. 10 games. It's, you know, I don't see that either because, you know, there's just so much to replace from last year.
Yeah. And that's why these, you know, Wyoming's got all those, I mean, I feel sorry for him, the number of people that have left, you know, first two quarterbacks,
this,
and they had a running back, 3,200 yards. And I'm hoping that game. Okay. So our three money games last year, UTSA beat us. We struggled against Charlotte, beat them, but then, and then just get waxed by Virginians. Like, we need to blow out Wyoming. We need to have a non third down game where we, probably not going to happen, but again, the offensive line just pound and play action, and yep. Just I need that. You need that, and yep. Then yep. We're going to be underdogs, Indiana, Virginia. But you know, I'm on every message board you can possibly get. I'll never type a word, but I will, you know, go over to Indiana's site and Virginia's site, and they're in DEFCON 1 about their offensive lines, both programs.
Virginia, I mean,
they were just, and they, I mean, Virginia had six guys that had started that could come back. They're all gone. And the center goes to Michigan. One guard went to USC. Once they were good. Mm-hmm. And with that definitely. Quarterback coming back and those, you know, the receivers are NFL, but that line is just, they are, and those people like us over there, the hardcores, are scared to death. And even Indiana, they don't care for their offensive line coach at all. Now, there's a couple players I think are okay. There's a Bedford and a what's the other guy's name? That's another one. But they're the three. They're not very good. So, mm-hmm. But the thing that concerns me here, the transfers, you never know. Are they, you know, Indiana, their players coming back were not very good. I don't think, but you just don't know about the transfers. But the bottom line is our offense and defensive lines match up really well with Indiana and Virginia. We're going to be underdogs, rightly so. I get that. Probably not going to win, but I've got them as toss-ups, and it's the first plane trip, but thank goodness we've played against Wyoming that week zero game. And then there you get and my buddies are like, yeah, but Indiana will get to see everything the new guy's doing. It's like, I get that. That's the trade-off for you. You know, mm-hmm. The old coaching cliche about you improve more between weeks one and weeks two. But, you know, and you've said on your Connolly stats, we've got the least amount possibly of experience coming back.
Yep. In the conference.
We needed this week zero game and then hop on the flight. And because if Indiana was coming over here, we'd win by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, both those games are toss-ups, and the fact that our offensive line, defensive lines, I think are going to be better than theirs, we've got a legitimate chance. So those are two toss-up games, and, oh, we can't go 4-0. Well, probably 2-2, but there's a good chance of 3-1. And the best case scenario, where years past, we would say there's no way we could be 4-0. There's just, you know, we can't win 2 or 3 games in the Big Ten. We can't do this. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, we don't have as much talent as we did last year, but second year's a system, and just you look a deep dive at those teams. One of my buddies like, oh, there's no way you're going to beat Virginia. They killed us. I'm like, yeah, and they got the quarterback back and NFL receivers, but their linemen are all gone. And then their defense wasn't very good last year. So it's and they're coming. They're coming here. That's their first flight. So, but the thing we haven't talked about, I'm just a tad concerned with our field goal kicking.
Yep.
And is that going to be a game where both of those games are toss-ups and it comes down to we got to make a field goal from 47 yards to beat those teams. And that's where it comes. That's the difference between 2-2 and 4-0.
Yep.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I almost don't – like I've been wanting – like I've had that in my mind. We need to talk about specialists, you know, new long snapper, new holder, new place kicker, new punter, you know, everything else. I think we know what that is by now. So I'm going to like skip over that because I don't want to talk through the thought of losing to Indiana and Virginia because we missed 4 or 5 field goals. I don't want to put that out in the universe. Here's what I'm going to close with because we need to close here. I'm going to close with this. Like, here's my thought. Like, when I think forward to this season, I picture myself at the press box in Indiana. This is where I picture myself. Like, where I picture the season hinging. And as I've written, like, you know, fourth quarter, close game, can we pull it out kind of thing. I'm picturing that scenario. And I picture what it looks like if we win. And so what I – if we win that Indiana game, right? If we win that Indiana game and I'm standing there, like, here's what my thoughts will be. I'll just say it this way. That game, if you remember, was originally at Wisconsin. Before they changed the schedule, within the last year – before they changed the schedule, we would open up with an at Wisconsin game on Labor Day weekend. They changed it up. We swapped out a game at Penn State for a game at Indiana, and they gave us a new schedule. And they moved Indiana game to the first weekend in September, and they moved the Wisconsin game to the first weekend in October.
And I got to interrupt if I could. Yep. There was a chance we were going to play Ohio State instead of Indiana.
Right, right. They could have swapped out. Yes. Right. They could have.
Their boards were saying that.
So, yes. Yeah. They could have swapped out our at Penn State, and we'd have to go at Ohio State. Instead, we get at Indiana for that one, which is good, you know, because the other two are Michigan and Michigan State. So it's good that we have Indiana. You know, we wanted, you know, every year you want Rutgers, Maryland, and Indiana as your three crossovers. But yes, so you know, if we win that Indiana game, I will just be sitting there thinking like, oh my gosh, like look at what can hinge here. Like, because we have a week zero game against Wyoming and say we win that and then we win at Indiana, we were looking at 0-1 with a really tough schedule and a later road game at Penn State coming up versus now we would be 2-0. We would be looking at Virginia and their 7 lost offensive linemen and thinking, you know, if we can get that game, we're 3-0, beat Chattanooga 4-0. Like, that Indiana game is the thought of where my whole thing focuses. If we beat Wyoming and then go at Indiana and find some way to win that, all of my thoughts will begin to really, really change. Because I will then think of the Virginia win, a Chattanooga win, and going into that Wisconsin game, receiving votes, 4-0, and, you know, a little extra time because we had the Thursday night game to prepare for that matchup with Wisconsin. So I just think through those two seasons. One season starts 0-1 at Wisconsin. The other season starts, oh my gosh, what if we were 4-0 going up to Wisconsin? Think of the confidence. I do this all the time. I do this every year. I think of that. You know, I bring it up over games in like 2013 of like, oh my God, we're about to beat Cincinnati. And when we do this, if we beat Washington next week, and then what do? We go 4-8 on the season. We only win one Big Ten game, whatever. I do this all the time and I get it. I understand. I know me. I know what I'm doing. But my thoughts are still fully focused on somewhere around 11 p.m. Eastern time in the fourth quarter of that Indiana game on that Friday night of Labor Day weekend, thinking if we can pull this out, we have a chance to go into that Wisconsin game really, really rolling into a season, only needing two wins in the final eight games to get to a bowl. That could be massive. Will it be?
That's not, yeah.
Yes.
You're right. That's not drinking orange Kool-Aid. It's,
yes.
Those games are toss-ups. We did really well in some toss-up games last year, and
and we're going at Indiana, who was 2-10 last year, and changed both coordinators, and it's their first game, and sometimes with both coordinators changing, that first game can be a bit of a disaster. So
they don't have people returning. They did really well in the transfer portal.
Yes.
They're just, you know, Missouri quarterback.
Right. They're just trying a new team.
Really well. It's just, you know, and then they've got, they're really high on, you know, I think there's a running back from Auburn, Shivers, that's got some quicks and strong and just, but, you know, you look at Athlon, Phil Steele, preseason, all Big Ten, and there's four teams, and how many of those, Indiana just doesn't have a lot of those guys coming back. And this is, but it's a road trip, first flight, a lot of inexperience on our part. We played the game before, and our defensive staff gets it, and they're not going to be, okay, so the offensive coordinator is new. Well, we've got a, you know, our scheme isn't some intricate 300 different defenses. It's simple, but we just, again, can we run the ball on them? Play action, DeVito, just make it close and kick that field goal at the end for the win.
I'm in, coach. We're starting 4-0. It's happening. I don't even know what we need to watch. Let's just start breaking down Wisconsin film to see if we can start 5-0.
I am with you.
Okay. Thank you for doing this. This is great. I enjoy our calls for the last, 11 years we've been doing this. So it's great to finally record one. We will do it again, most definitely. And thank you for taking the time to do this with me.
You bet.
All right. ILL.
I and I. Talk to you.